You're listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of May 1st, 2013, and we are running out of video games.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast, and my name is Scott Juster.
I'm George Albor.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And it is the dog days of spring.
It's spring still? It's not summer officially?
Nah, not even close. We're in the spring. The slow spring is what I call it.
Well, here in California, it's been summer since about February, so...
That's right. Through a glorious combination of trade winds and global warming, we experience beautiful weather pretty much all year.
But we don't always have a treasure trove of games to sustain us, or do we?
Well, I mean, sometimes we have to go into the back catalog. So, you know, we start off the year with a bang. But over the past couple weeks, George and I were remarking that it's been a bit slow in terms of what we've been playing in terms of new releases. And so we thought it might be interesting to do periodically we do kind of like a what you've been playing podcast, and so this is going to be one of those. So we're going to talk about what we've been playing, and hopefully it'll be some unexpected ones. I know I have at least one that will will strain the definition of playing a game.
Do I even know what it is?
No. Well, you do technically, but I mentioned it a long time ago.
Playing both parts of chess, like, that doesn't count. Scott,
I mean, if you hit yourself in the head really hard.
Well, do you want to go first?
Sure. Okay. So several weeks ago, in what I can only describe as just kind of a fugue state of good intentions and poor planning, I bought a Fitbit.
You bought a Fitbit. Okay.
So a Fitbit is basically an over expensive fancy pedometer that can measure your walking, like your steps, or if you're running, I guess, and also has like a little accelerometer in it so it can tell if you're going up steps, so it measures like how many floors you're climbing.
Well, if you have the advanced Fitbit.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh yeah, when I go dumb, I go all dumb. Like, I got the Fitbit One, not that, you know, not the light Fitbit or whatever. And so, but the big tie is that it's connected to this network, you know, it syncs to the internet and it starts collecting stats. And of course, what would an online record keeping system be in this day and age without badges?
Yeah. Oh man, we need those stinking badges, Scott.
So many badges.
Scott, I have to tell you, I also have a Fitbit.
Okay. Whoa. What?
Yeah.
Was it before or after I wrote that thing like a month ago?
It must have been around the same time, actually. I don't know. For some reason, I didn't realize you had one. I don't know. It just never crossed my mind.
Did you go into a fugue state of good intentions and poor planning and buy one, or did you get it gifted to you somehow?
Oh, as a modern employee of an internet company, Scott, I was gifted it.
Yeah, that's most of the... Well, see, that's the thing. I got real snobby about it because most of my coworkers had, like, the Fitbit. What do they call it? The square one? I forget what it's called.
The Fit Light, maybe? I don't know.
It's something like that. So anyway, but like, so I wanted the other one because it can also track your sleep, which, by the way, is pretty much a hoax after testing it, but we can talk about that later. It's kind of, it's not really, it's a game in the way that many, like, you know, Facebook and social things are games, because, like, they call it, like, oh, here's gamification, here's some badges and stuff, but really, like, I find myself growing more and more aligned with Ian Bogost and saying that this is, like, pointsification, and is basically, like, stuff that they're calling a game that actually has no game mechanics in it.
Well, I mean, the proof is in the pudding, though, right? Do you find yourself using the Fitbit more often because of this point system?
That's the thing. Like, I tried to tease out why I'm using it. And the reason why I was using it in the first place was that I had gotten into a bad routine where I just wasn't exercising enough. And so I wanted a way to, like, quantify my exercising. So I would always have a reminder of it, even if I wasn't necessarily working towards any particular goal.
Yep.
But then, like, one of my coworkers, like, very few people that I run into actually use the social feature of the quote unquote game. Like, I'm only friends with one person on the social network, and like, we don't ever talk about it.
The weird thing is that my work is that there's actually quite a few people who are in, like, weekly competitions for most steps. And they do talk about it. And it is a competitive thing to them.
So there is, like, that section of the game, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you even want... I guess you can start to kind of call that a game, even though it's more of a competition than something with its own mechanics and rules and stuff, you know?
Yeah, totally.
But anyway, so, like, this is, like, my like, gamification check-in of the year, and it's, like, still not really convinced. Like, I don't... Every once in a while, I'll get an email saying, oh, my gosh, you did your, you know, you've gone 50 total miles or something since you started using it, and... It's just, I don't know, like, the statistics are far more compelling than the actual supposed rewards, you know?
Right, exactly. And specifically, I mean, the reason Weight Watchers as a weight loss program has been successful for so long is because stat tracking really does work.
Mm-hmm.
They might attach badges to that stat tracking, but it doesn't fundamentally change why it's useful or why it doesn't work for some people.
Yeah.
Like
me,
I've lost my Fitbit. I don't know where it is. Probably in the wash.
If it is, then it gets all, you know, twirled around all the time.
Oh, I've been going for miles. Yeah, it's great. Take that, coworkers.
Yeah, so that's my not quite a game, but it's like an ongoing experiment in game-related
stuff.
Junk. You know? Yeah. Because it really is junky.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, well, why don't we move on to something a little bit... In fact, it's quite the opposite. It's Don't Starve, which is what I've been playing. Yeah. This is a recent Clay release, and it's been available for a while now in an open beta format, probably like, gosh, 6 months at least.
Oh yeah, I remember this, like, taking the first look at it in the winter sometime. Mm-hmm.
It's actually really interesting to play a game that long, because you're able to see all of the different changes that they've put out in various patches, and a lot has changed since I first started playing it.
Yeah.
But now that it's been fully released, they still have updates and whatnot scheduled, but the game is 100% out and playable, and it's pretty fun. It's not the type of game that I thought I would really enjoy, but it's one of those experiences where I just can't help but try to get my little guy not to starve.
And for those that haven't played it, it is, you know, it is a survival game in the same vein as Minecraft, where you start off with nothing, and then you can cut down some trees, you make those trees into sticks, you make those sticks into tools, and then you can kind of build up to the point where you're, like, you know, crafting amazing armor and potions and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a wonderful mystery to the game, and I wrote about this a little bit a while back in a recent Pop Matters post, but there's something super enjoyable about, like, opening a door or a door. There's no doors in the wilderness. There are wormholes, though. Or,
those wormholes gross me out.
They make really gross sounds. Yeah.
Yeah.
or like mining or finding like a pig hut or whatever, right? You kill something and there's a drop and it's like a blue gem or some eyeball stick or you find some weird crankshaft in the middle of the woods. And I have no idea what it's for, but I know that theoretically, if I found all of the right things and did everything correctly, I could build something out of it. And that kind of mystery is super compelling to get me to keep playing an experience, right? Even though the game is really hard, and it's permadeath, so if you die, that's it, you're screwed.
Yep.
There's a couple ways to mitigate it, but I don't really know how to do it, at least do it well. And it gets increasingly difficult, right? Summer becomes winter in the game. Mm-hmm. And when winter comes around, even if you thought you're used to not starving, you'll really be tested on how well you can put together your sort of system to stay alive. But it's fun. It's really good. You've played it a little bit. What do you think?
Yeah. I've played it. I probably haven't played it as much as you, but I was experimenting a bit with the other... I unlocked one other character, the
pyro,
the little
woman.
Yeah, the little girl who, like, can spontaneously light fires when darkness falls.
Yeah.
Have you gotten, like, the big difference between, like, the kid and or the boy and the little girl? Like, is it just that, like, the different crafting, like, with the beard and stuff like that?
Yeah, because he's the only one who will, I think, naturally grow a beard.
Yeah.
So, like, you can use facial hair at some point in the game for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I've never actually gone that far along any science tree, because once I start really exploring science stuff, I get brave, and then I die.
Yeah. I like what you're saying about the subtlety, though, because there is a lot to that. I mean, the first time I ate a mushroom, which, you know, great idea when you're in the wilderness, just eat a random mushroom that you find. You start hallucinating, but in really subtle ways.
Yeah.
you know, like the little like shadow bugs that are like, I thought they were actually enemies and I was like waving my torch at them. It's like, oh no, wait, I am just tripping balls.
Well, I mean, there's also now, there's an insanity meter now. And so depending on what you do, as you go crazier, the hallucinations become more real and vivid. So like at first you'll just see like a tree will rustle or a bush will rustle. But eventually those shadow creatures actually do become enemies, or claws will try and like snuff out your fire in the middle of the night, and all sorts of weird things. Or like the jackalopes in the game, jackalopes become like shadow jackalopes. So if you kill them, they drop monster meat instead of regular meat.
Yep.
It's red. It's really neat. And it's another one of those things where I don't know what I'm doing in the game. So every time something just spontaneously happens, it's a good feeling because I feel like I'm actually in this crazy, weird world.
Yeah, I think so too. That's actually related to some of the other games that I've been playing.
Ooh, bring it on.
Somewhat. I play a lot of games. Like, there's a handful of games that I play, like, this sounds kind of weird, but I play certain games, I would consider them, like, recreationally. Like, you know, there is, you know, there's doing work or doing something unrelated, you know, and then there's, like, playing games in a serious way. Like, I'm going to write and talk about this game, and I have to experience this game.
Right.
And then there's, like, leisure games where it's, like, you know, I'm just playing this for the sake of doing it because it's kind of like its own separate segmented activity. It doesn't even feel like playing a game, you know?
Oh, yeah. I have plenty of those.
We will talk about one of yours in a minute, but the similar, like the games I go to when I go to one of those games, similar to Don't Starve. So I've been playing a lot of Spelunky and the Binding of Isaac.
Oh, nice.
Because it's like those games, like the investment is just so low because you start from zero every time. Mm-hmm. And when you end, you go back to zero, and there's nothing really, you know, when you start and when you begin, you don't really have to build yourself up to anything. You just take in the skills that you have and try to make the best of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's over, there's really nothing to mourn because you started with nothing anyway, you know?
Yeah. You can beat those games though, right?
Yeah, you definitely can.
And you've beaten them before, I presume?
I've never beaten Binding of Isaac because I hadn't put a lot of time. Like, this is the first time I ever put significant time into Binding of Isaac, mm-hmm. but I have finished Spelunky, and yeah, oh man, side note on the ending of the PC version of Spelunky, because I've never finished the 360 version of Spelunky, but I imagine it's relatively similar. The last boss gave me a feeling that I really hadn't had since, like, you know, Super Mario Brothers 3 when you're on the last boss, because there's just so much pressure, and like, oh my gosh, I've been playing this for such a long time, and I know if I die, I'm going to have to go all the way back to the end. You get that? I very rarely get the, like, sweaty controller hands anymore in my old jaded age.
Yeah.
But that's, like, one of the few times that still happens.
So when you play these leisure games, do you feel like you're playing competitively? Like, are you trying to get to the end, or are you just messing around?
I mean, I'm trying to get to the end, but I'm also, at the same time, like, listening to a podcast or something, you know?
Right, low-level investment kind of thing.
Yeah, it really is, like, a investment in flow instead of, you know, picking apart every nuance of the game. And in a way, I feel, you know, I don't do that enough because there is something that happens when you are kind of almost subconsciously engaged with a game. Like, there's a level of it that you don't get if you're just kind of like trying to pick apart every single aspect of it. Like, the holistic, like, how does this really feel in my hands, you know? Like, how do my fingers really interact with the keys or whatever,
right?
Like, there's a level of abstraction that I think is important to get at. And if you're micromanaging your experience too much, you know, you're only getting one side of, like, what is actually going on in the game.
Yeah. When you have that level of detachment, but also familiarity with the mechanics.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can really create that feeling of flow really nicely.
Yeah, it's weird because it involves a lot of investment. Like, you really need to learn the game really well so you're not really thinking about it.
I mean, you're still testing your level of mastery over whatever system you happen to be in. But it's something that once you've grown so comfortable with it. I mean, I think it's the case where, you know, if any of us, or probably the vast majority of our listeners, were to play any Mario game, they just sort of fall into it.
It's that high level familiarity that you can somewhat divest yourself from the moment to moment experience and still get a sense of how the game flow actually works. And this is all very abstract, but like it's hard to put words to. But those roguelikes for me are like the key game that does that, because you just, and, you know, a lot like Don't Starve, you just have to start from zero every time. And so you're really, you're doing these big kind of circles of gameplay every time you play the game.
I mean, do you think that taps into the sort of Zen gaming? Like, is the way that you play Spelunky now similar to the way that you might play Flower?
Yeah, it is kind of similar. It's interesting because they're so much harsher. Like, there's really no way to, like, repeat Flower in a way that is contingent on, or in a way that is created by, you know, failure and retrying it and, like, right. You know, getting up to a certain level, because, like, it's much more linear experience, where, like, Spelunky is a much more circular experience, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, hit me with another thing that you're playing.
Okay, well, why don't I go to my leisure game then, yes. Shall we? Of course, I've talked about
Sims.
The Sims. Oh, yeah, My Little Pony's Bedtime Adventure. Is that a game? That's probably a game. I don't mean to make fun of My Little Pony. It's a huge community. They'll ravage me.
They'll also DDoS our website. So
League of Legends, of course. That's a game that League I go back to Legends. Constantly. It's a problem, I think. But it's fun. I still have a really good time with it, so it's always fun to check in. The weird thing that I find now is that I've been playing it for so long that there's, like, new generations of players coming in. So mm-hmm. I have people that I've never played with before who are just now playing League of Legends, and I'm like, come play with me, it'll be great. And so I find myself mm-hmm. Playing with them. But I actually want to set that aside and talk a little bit about something tangential, mm-hmm. which is I've started to get really into the competitive scene of League of Legends.
Oh, you mean like the, for lack of a better term, esports
side of it? The esports side of League of Legends.
Yeah.
And it's pretty weird because, you know, I am a fair weather fan of sports, right? Like soccer season, I'll watch a few games. Football season, I'm mostly in it because I've been playing fantasy football. But League of Legends, they've been doing a LCS, which is a sort of long season 3 championship series for League mm-hmm. of Legends. And I watch every week the North American games. So I'm watching some of the same teams play time and again. And I've come to this point now where I feel really comfortable talking about and being familiar with some of the North American teams. And I realized, like, oh my gosh, I think I might be a sports fan.
Do you feel like they're setting people up as, you know, whoever is, like, who's running this? Like, is there, like, a production company or something? Like, do you feel like they're trying to set people up as, like, we want our, you know, sports stars? Like, we want our, you know, Michael Jordan or whatever of League of Legends, you know?
It's strange because I think that yes and no. On the yes side, that, you know, they release videos that are spotlights on some of the big names in the league, mm-hmm. right? They'll do like, oh, let's go to this gaming house and meet all five of the people on the team and let's look at their room and let's talk to individuals and see what they think about how the season is going, things like that. At the same time, it sort of happens naturally. You know, like, mm-hmm. there are already fans of some of these players, and they've already been big fans and had a following for a while now because of their Twitch streams. So mm-hmm. it's not necessarily something where the people running the show are forced to sort of put together a roster of stars. Mm-hmm. The other side of it is that some of the lesser-known teams have roster changes happening constantly. Like, people are leaving their team either because they quit or because they've been fired, and the manager wants to mix things up because the team's just not doing very well. And so you get
teams. How is that structured? Like, how do you get fired from a team?
Well, so most teams have a manager, mm-hmm. and the manager has their selection of, like, the five people they want on their team. And if you're unhappy and you don't make the cut, then you can just be fired. They'll just.
And how do you get to be a manager? Like, are you already, like, an established player or something?
You know, I actually don't know. I think some of them are established players. Some of them are managers from other esports leagues. You know, they have.
When you were saying, like, oh, here's the training house and stuff, it sounded a lot like professional StarCraft.
I mean, it's functionally like that, right? Like, the teams yeah. that are living in the same house for the season have been living there for a while now. They have a set schedule, you know, like, yeah. oh, practice from 10 to 12. Then they yeah. look at enemy videos for 2 hours where they watch replays and analyze replays. Then they do some skirmishes where they try out new strategies and they do whatever, right? So it definitely has the feel of people who take it super seriously. And mm-hmm. there's even, I mean, one of the funnier things, funny and sad, is that there's already, like, drama, right? Yeah. There was a recent spat. Curse was, like, the number one team for most of the season. And there was, like, this falling out between the team captain and the person who plays support. And there was, like, an online video where one was shit-talking the other. And, like, some shit-talking was accidentally caught on someone's Skype, like, screenshot and shared on the internet.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It really is like pre-big game sports where it's like, oh my gosh, did you see what Ray Lewis tweeted? Like, you know.
It's a little bit too much though, like, I don't know, real world or something. Like,
right, right. Well, that's why I wonder how much of it is produced. You know, like how much do they really want to stir the pot up to get people, you know, get people interested in it, like in the drama.
Yeah, I mean, I think Riot Games takes their franchise very seriously, and I don't think that they want drama. You know, they don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've banned people for being dicks in real life, right? So mm-hmm. I don't think that they're the type of people who would stir up like false right. drama to get people hooked, especially because all that drama is not coming from them. They're not videotaping it. They're not highlighting it. You know, I mm-hmm. think they want their sports athletes to be taken seriously as sports athletes, or esports athletes at least.
That's clear. I mean, like, you don't get as popular as League of Legends does, and like the community is as sprawling as it is. Like, I don't know, like Riot is masters of that, you know, managing yeah. the community. But I was gonna ask how, if at all, the, you know, these elite LOL players I'm serious, like they're elite, right? Yeah. I mean, like oh, yeah. they're like they're the top
and you the know, best in of the best world. Yeah,
yeah. How do they think about how Riot expands and modifies the game? Because, you know, the characters change and things rotate in and out. Like, you know, what's the end game there?
I mean, I haven't read much or seen much about them specifically talking about changes that Riot makes. For the most uh-huh. part, I mean, Riot is, you know, on the ball with the changes that they make, right? Like, they're thinking about the esports scene whenever they make a design decision, whenever they release a new champion.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what you do see, though, is teams excited and willing to adapt to whatever changes happen, right? Mm-hmm. Season 2, between Season 1 and Season 2, and Season 2 and Season 3, there are usually large changes to the game. Mm-hmm. And whenever there are large changes, it forces people to change their strategy. It forces people to think of new combinations of team composition to make things work. The meta might change, right? So you mm-hmm. see all of them, all of the players, the esports players, just adapting to whatever design decisions Riot makes. I don't necessarily see them bristling at it. If anything, I think they see it as an opportunity.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that's like the main differentiator between esports and traditional athletics, in that as part of the game, like change is part of the game. And like yeah. you can see StarCraft yeah. making this kind of rough transition where like they played the same game for like nigh on a decade or whatever, and now, you know, Blizzard has to be really careful about the types of changes they make because people are used to it being static. And then you have these newer generation games like League of Legends where, you know, part of the nature of the game is itself change. So you're not going to have like Counter-Strike people who only play like 1.05 or whatever, you know, it's like that's just not going to happen with these like yeah. current generation competitive games.
Yeah, that's why real sports are so much less exciting than people who like cast missiles out of their face.
You haven't seen XFL 2.
No, that's true. That's very true. I heard Ray Rice had some augmented surgery.
Oh man. Anything? Should I say one more thing that I'm playing?
Yeah, yeah, please.
Let's do like a really hard pivot and say that everyone, especially if you're a teacher in like, you know, middle school or whatever, you should play the game Papers, Please.
Yeah, so you've told me a little bit about this, but what exactly do you do in Papers, Please?
In Papers, Please, it's by, let me look up the guy's name real quick. It's the same guy who did Republia Times. His name's Lucas Pope. And right now, Papers, Please is in beta, so you can actually, you know, play the first 9 days or whatever of the game, which gives you a really good idea of what the game's going to be like. But it is a game where you play as a border agent who has to determine whether immigrants can come into and cross the border into the country.
Ooh. So not politically charged at all.
Nah, pretty neutral. And, you know, it's the mise-en-scene is like, you know, 1980s, you know, fake post-communist bloc, you know, like the walls have come down and now they have to figure out how people are going to immigrate to all these, like, you know, Balkanized countries, basically. It's just a really great hands-on description of the banality of evil. You know, like if you're trying to right. describe to people what, you know, Hannah Arendt was talking about when she was talking about that sort of thing, it's like you have this set of rules that you need to follow in order to get paid. And if you don't get paid, that means your in-game family starts to suffer in like terrible ways. because
so it like tracks your family.
Yeah, like you're making money to like buy food and medicine for your family, and so like and your performance dictates how much money you get. So like it's in your best interest to be as quick and as efficient as possible when you're processing these immigrants. But, you know, what does that do to you and what does that do to them as you process them? Like, what if someone's passport has, like, you know, the wrong birth date on it, but everything else is correct? Do you let them through and get written up and, like, dock your pay? Or do you reject them, possibly sending them back to a war-torn country where they'll quite likely die, you know?
Do you have a quota in the game? Or like, what are the... What is forcing... Why do you just not let everyone through?
Because... If you, like, let's say you let someone through erroneously, you get a warning, and after enough warnings, you start getting your pay docked, and...
Okay, I see. So everything that you do is double-checked,
basically. Yeah, the overseers basically double-check whatever you're doing. And it starts off easy enough, but, like, you have to manually go through all the rule books, you know, is this issuing province correct for this state? Like, is the birth date correct? You know, is the gender correct? What does the height and weight look like? Today... You know, the immigrants need an extra special pass if they want to work. So you need to look for this seal before you can let them through. And, like, even if they have a passport, they need a work visa. So, like, you need that too. And, like, it just starts to get more and more complex and bureaucratic. And then the people start talking to you. Like, oh, you have to let me in. You have to do this. And it's like, again, it's one of those, like, Oregon Trail type games that is both extremely satisfying to play because the mechanical... satisfaction you get is akin to something like Diner Dash or The Sims, where you're like lining up processes and then seeing those processes play out. So you get that weird, like, oh, this is so efficient and great. What am I doing? Like, you know,
this sounds right up my alley.
It's a very, very, it's a great game. And I think especially because, you know, especially for, I was thinking back to like, my time in school and like teachers trying to teach kids why people would act the way they would in, you know, Nazi Germany or communist Russia or something. Like, why would people possibly inform on each other? Like, why wouldn't you just not do your job? And like, this is like a systemic way of expressing that the system of rules and the expectation behind those rules are so powerful and the consequences are so real that you have almost no choice, or the choice you do have is a horrible one, you know?
Yeah.
It's a pretty amazing game, and it's only in beta right now, so who knows how expanded it will get, but there's definitely some very, like, intriguing things that they're going to do to, like, mess with how certain you are when you are waving people through or denying them.
Awesome. Yeah. Completely free as well, right?
Yeah, now. The beta, you know, you go to work every day and like the days are levels basically where it's like you clear it, you see how many people you were able to process and then you get paid accordingly.
Wow. I feel like I have more questions, but I think that we'll probably end up talking about this in a future podcast.
Yeah, I think it will go well with his other game and maybe like one or two other things that you know more about than I do, but it's a pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive.
I do know about Border Patrol. I don't know.
Don't say that. I have a quota to meet.
Oh gosh. Okay, well I'll round us off with one more game that I've been playing, and that is Monaco by Andy Schatz.
Yes.
This is the game that won an IGF award like 3 years ago.
I feel like it wins finally an IGF award released. Like every year.
Oh yeah, I mean at this point he just uses them as paperweights, I'm pretty sure. Monaco is a top down heist game. Mm-hmm. And it is so beautiful, Scott.
So many pixels.
It's so good. So many pixels. Monaco does this amazing thing, and few games can really do it, at least do the transition really well. And that is, it goes from plotting skillfully, like executing everything, right? You are trying to master the system that's at hand. You see where everything's at in a sort of God's eye view. You're ready to go. You are a number one criminal. Mm-hmm. To complete, shit is hitting the fan. Just go, 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 run, shoot people, get out of the way. Like, you're just barely scraping by, and then you duck into a bush, and then it resets. And that loop between planned order and absolute chaos is so satisfying. And you know that you're always walking that raggedy edge between, like, I think I can pull this off, I think I can pull this mm-hmm. off, and not being able to pull it off. And the only games that really come to mind that do that are stealth games.
Yep.
For the most part, you know, something like
that feeling Dishonored right. a lot, because then the game wasn't over if you got caught, it just transitioned into a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, the difference, though, like, the cooler thing, I think, that Monaco does slightly better than Dishonored, and this is, I mean, they're so hard to compare because they're so different, mm-hmm. but it's that usually in Dishonored, I would alert a guard, or I would be found, and my stealth would be ruined, and the panic was just, how do I escape? How do I lose their attention? How can I get out of this situation? But for the most part, when it happens in Monaco, well, yes, sometimes you just want to hide. Other times you want to say, okay, I've been seen. How much stuff can I do now between now and the time that I have to hide again?
How much planning are you doing with colleagues before you go into these missions?
So I only actually started playing multiplayer today. I wanted to get through most of it single player, okay. but it got to a level that was very difficult. And then I started playing multiplayer, and I completely missed out. Multiplayer is really where the game shines. Mm-hmm. I do have to say, though, the experience playing single player and the experience playing multiplayer is very different, because the level of planning is, at least for a group of four, mm-hmm. it's sort of harder to plan with a group of four. Yep. Because everyone's off doing their own thing.
Well, that's like the classic tale of the heist. Like, you want the minimum number of people, because right. Like, that's the way things go bad with too many people. You know.
Oh, I mean, Ocean's 12. Come on, we should have known. Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing though about multiplayer is that it has that same loop, but it's slightly different now, right? Because some of the chaos is sort of always happening, but then other times, like your players hit a brick wall, or like. One of the really compelling moments in multiplayer is that you can die in multiplayer, but instead of single player where it kicks you back and then you have to pick a new character to play as, if you die, your corpse just sits there and lays there, but your friends can revive you. Mm. So what happens is that sometimes people will make a mad dash for gold and die, and they're stuck in this shitty position, and you're the only one left, and you have to go and make this plan all on your own to get them back to life, mm-hmm. right? Like, there was a great scene today where... scene. I call it scene because it's right, weirdly cinematic for like this pixelated top-down game. But there's this great moment in a game I played today where two people were dead, and it was me and this other person, and the two people died in like the worst spots possible. Mm-hmm. So I had this one guy go in, lure the guards away, and get him to chase them. So he was just creating chaos intentionally. He wanted to be seen. He didn't want to hide again, right? So he basically took them on this huge rabbit chase, like throwing smoke grenades and then sticking around while I rezzed the guys and got out of there. That's such a cool level of planning and such a neat way to interact with the world that's pretty rare.
He never wanted to come back from that mission. That was going to be his final.
I also just really love like heist movies and stuff. So I dig the ability to recreate some of those moments.
Yeah, I mean, it tears it. We said it last week. I said it during one of the streams that I was doing, but we'll definitely have to play that. We'll get some other people in on it too.
Yeah, we should play a four-player.
Yeah.
We could Twitch it.
See if we can buck the trend of some lone wolf, you know, ruining everything.
I mean, it's weird because it's got this level of, like, you want to do a speed run because you're always being timed. Mm-hmm. But speed is not the friend of patience.
Right. That's true. And then you'll end up like more like careful planning might actually save you more time than running is what you're saying.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Well, I mean, and not even that. If you completely ignore the timer, if you just pull off an excellent heist and no one sees you, God, it feels so good.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, yeah. Now I'm going to go download this. Screw this podcast. Hold on, I'm out. Have borders to patrol.
I gotta patrol some borders. Yeah. You have to go kidnap foreign diplomats.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think, you know, this is like, again, sometimes slow times are good because you get into the, you know, backlog and off color stuff. So I was glad they were able to, you know, go through these.
Oh yeah, I mean, esports and
esports and Fitbits games.
Esports and Fitbits, man. Those could be podcasts all their own.
Ugh, we'll see. We'll see what happens when I get my new badges. I'll give everyone updates. I'm sure people are so interested in it.
You don't have to. That's fine. I'm not giving you a badge for that.
I'm going to Twitter update it. I'm going to try to link it up to my Twitter somehow. I'm sure you can. All right, everyone. Before I do something terrible, we're going to wrap this up. If you want to reach us via email, you can with any time, any questions or comments, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And of course, if you've played any of the games we've been talking about today and want to give us your thoughts, experiencepoints.net is the website where you'll find this podcast, our other posts. I encourage you to leave your comments there and hang out. Bring a friend.
Yep.
Bring three friends.
And then steal it.
The gentleman, you're going to need a lockpick.
And then I reject all of your visas. Sorry. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.